America behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to Car Stuff. This is a special underwater edition of Car Stuff, Ben.
Yes, you've been with us while we go underground, listeners, and you've also been with Scott and I while we go to some different types of topics that people haven't usually seen before.
Now, when I say underwater, though, I'm sure you probably have already seen in the title of this podcast that we're talking about artificial reefs, and you may think, well, what the heck does that really have to do with cars? But you'll find out that there's an awful lot of machinery that's below the surface.
Yeah, let's start with one simple observation here, Scott. A lot of ships are huge.
Yeah, very big.
And so huge, in fact, that when they are decommissioned, a decommissioned ship, of course, is one that is no longer used on the sea or in water. When they're decommissioned, they can actually present a huge problem for disposal. You know, what do you do with this thing that is longer than most buildings, larger than a lot of buildings, you know? And what we wanted to talk about is something that I think is very out of the box and creative, creative answer to this problem. And I'll be honest with you, it touches my soft side a little bit.
Does it really?
The softy, yeah, the guy, yeah.
Why is that?
Because what they're doing, and we should say this is a suggestion that came to us from one of our fellow podcasters.
That's right, Sarah Doughty. Sarah said, "Hey, I stumbled across this article in the most recent National Geographic. That was February 2007's edition, February 2011's edition of National Geographic, and the article is titled "Relics to Reefs," and it was about, well, sinking things and making reefs.
Right. And in this article, which I think is by Stephen Harrigan, they cover the they open with the process of sinking a ship, the General Hoyt S. Vandenberg. And now what they're doing is they take this ship, which is over 500 feet long. They blow it up to get it to try to get it to sink down. And once it sinks down, they artificially create a shipwreck. And then once it sinks down, the hope is that it becomes a habitat for marine life. For fish that would normally live in a natural coral reef.
Yeah, something made of rock or, you know, whatever happens to be under there. The thing is, this happened in, May of 2009, right?
Right.
It was just off of Key West. They said it's 7 miles off of Key West. So it's prime, you know, diving, snorkeling type area, diving, I guess, in this case, because you're talking about a pretty deep sea wreck, really. But yeah, it's not something that is brand new to us.
Not at all.
No, we've been doing this for a long, long time. You know that, one of the facts from this article here is that, fishermen really enjoy, fishing around underwater reefs. And they've known that shipwrecks are prime fishing sites, according to the article. And since the 1830s, American fishermen have been creating artificial reefs using things like logs that are laced together, just branches, sinking, trees that they find on the ground. I've heard of people doing this around here. If you take Christmas trees and sink them off of your own private dock somewhere and create a habitat for fish.
Fish love them.
This is not, the coral reef that we're talking about, but it turns out that, when you sink an object like a ship, it just becomes a magnet for coral and sponges and starfish and everything. It becomes a breeding ground, really.
And those fishermen are also not just dropping logs. There are other vehicles involved here.
The thing. All right. So, yeah, this is where, back in the 1830s, sure, they're sinking logs and they're, they're crafting these well-made, very environmentally friendly, I guess, artificial reefs in their own little pond or whatever.
Sure, the way a beaver would make a dam.
Not really a reef. This is more like a fishing habitat.
Yeah.
Right? So,
yeah.
I mean, the modern version of this that's mentioned in this article, you want to go ahead and list off some of the things?
Yeah, sure, Scott. They've got, subway cars, which makes sense to me.
Sure.
Right? And they've got, oil drilling rigs, which is just crazy.
Those are huge.
Those are gargantuan. Yeah. And the one that surprised me the most, battle tanks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Now, you know what? That one didn't surprise me very much at all, really. I got to say, because I think I've mentioned this guy before. I had a great uncle who worked at General Motors.
Yes.
He was a designer right around, you know, the whole, the Corvette days guy. I don't remember the branch of military he's in, but I do clearly remember him telling me that he had a military Jeep that, was part of, he was a soldier. He was a, I don't know what position he held. He was an officer, had his own kind of private military Jeep for use. And after the war, it was sunk off the coast of Florida as part of a reef. And, you know, it kind of thing that brings tears to his eyes. Mm-hmm. He's no longer with us, but I mean, he definitely got emotional when he was talking about it because it was his baby for a long, long time. And, the military sank a bunch of these as well as tanks and other, machinery to create artificial reefs off the coast of Florida. And, I guess I remember hearing that from a long, long time ago, but, so I know they've been doing it for a long time. I know they've got a lot of, ships as well, large ships that they've sunk. You know what the biggest one is? You do. Don't
is
you?
It, let's see. I'm shuffling. You do it. You
that's
do
all
it.
Right. All right. I'm There's shuffling. A, get this, Ben. There is an aircraft carrier. That we have sunk. The United States has sunk this in the Gulf of Mexico.
The Oriskany, right?
That's right. Very good pronunciation. I'm going to try to do it myself. But where was this? This is about 20 or so miles out from Pensacola. And this was sunk in May of 2006. Here's the crazy thing about this, Ben. This is an 888-foot-long ship that they sunk in 212 feet of water. This is the largest ship in the world that's been intentionally sunk as an artificial reef.
This is just crazy.
It's enormous. And you can watch video of this thing going down. You can watch, there's still photographs and you could read all kinds of articles about it because it was big news when it happened.
And you can visit it too, right?
Yeah, that's right. Cause it's,
a reef.
It's a reef and it's diver habitat. You know, I mean, well, it's a fish habitat. Mm-hmm. You know what? One thing that I read about this, Ben, that I thought kind of interesting. It took 37 minutes to sink this thing. You would think it would have taken a lot longer. Now, they used 500 pounds of explosives to do it.
Okay.
And they thought it would take about 4.5 hours to sink. It sank in 37 minutes.
Wow.
I know. They're very effective at sinking this thing. However they did it really well. Now, a lot of it, of course, it was all cleaned out. Because you think about environmental concerns with something like
you
this.
You want to, especially on a warship, you want to get rid of anything that might be hazardous to the marine life.
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's a lot of junk on those things. I mean, and by junk, I mean that there's copper wire.
Sure.
There's of course fuel and leftover remnants from
electrical wire.
Exactly. Yeah. So you got the same thing I do. They spent $8.4 million for the sinking budget. I guess to sink this thing. Now, this is coming from the U.S. government National Artificial Reef Plan.
Sinking the Vandenberg.
Oh, that's for the Vandenberg. I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought that was for the.
No, I think the Oriskany is more expensive.
I would bet it would
larger.
Be. Yeah, that's
but
right.
Yeah, on the Vandenberg alone, right? Cost them over $8 million to sink it, which is funny. You know,
That's still a 500-foot ship. That's a big ship.
It is a big ship. It's a big job. It's a big demolition job. It's just to me, you know, having the emotional issues I have about spending money already, man.
Yeah.
It just seems so counterintuitive to me to spend money instead of like restoring a ship or maintaining it to spend the money sinking it.
Yeah. But you know what? It would have cost 10, you know, I don't know. I'm guessing 10 times that to restore the thing.
Absolutely.
Or to keep it afloat. And then they wouldn't really, would they have a purpose for it? Because they've advanced beyond that point. You know, it's old tech.
So they take out the copper wire, right?
Yeah, they take out the copper wire. They take out, they clean the fuel tanks, of course. They clean, the engines are taken out. One thing that I noticed on, let's go back. Guys, I want to talk just for a moment about the, Oriskany.
Yes, yes.
One thing that I watched the sinking of this thing because I couldn't help myself. I had to see it. And it didn't take very long. They did kind of, I didn't watch all 37 minutes, of course. I just watched, the quick version.
Just the highlights.
Exactly. But, one really interesting thing is there was a small boat that they had placed on board. Now, this is a rusty aircraft carrier, but there's a boat on top of the deck of this thing.
Like where the planes would land?
Yeah, exactly, where the planes would normally land. And the boat apparently has the controllers and electronics to detonate the explosions. And then when the boat below it sinks away, this thing kind of floats on – it bobs to the surface, floats on top, and they go retrieve that. So the detonation device is the relay, I guess, is in that boat. So if you watch the video, that's the story with that. Because I searched for a while to try to figure out what the heck that boat was doing there. You know, they keep a safe zone, of course, you know, when they do the blast. Because you'll see the blast, and it's very, very impressive. 500 pounds, I think they said, of plastic explosives were used and to blow the holes in the hull. But that boat was just a mystery to me at some point.
So wait. Was there someone on the boat?
No, there is no one on the boat.
You know, I would totally do that job.
If it's safe
enough for the electronics, man, I bet I could make it.
Yeah, but what if it gets sucked under with the ship? Because, you know, see, this thing went 212 feet down.
Well.
That's pretty deep.
You know what?
You'd still do it, wouldn't you?
Well, I feel like I've made it a matter of public record, Scott. Now I kind of have to do it.
Now you have to, sure.
Yeah,
hey, one more quick thing about this before we move on. Because,
Lay it on.
One more little piece of trivia about this boat, this specific boat. John McCain. John McCain deployed on this boat.
Okay, yeah.
This is the ship that he took off from before he was shot down over Hanoi when he was captured.
You know,
he spent 5 years as a prisoner of war. In 1967, this is the boat that he took off from before he was shot down.
67. What a weird experience. I wonder if he does if he dives recreationally or anything.
I don't know.
Because if I was him and I could dive down to that thing, I just can't imagine.
I don't know how you would handle it, because, you know, a lot of these ships and military implements that you see sunk, a lot of times there'll be veterans on hand that are watching, you know, that maybe served, that spent, you know, four terms on this or four tours rather, and, you know, they're kind of a little bit teary eyed about it because, this was home to them for so long.
It's very strange. It's very strange to see something like this demolished.
Yeah. It's something that saved your life so many times, or kept you alive in some way. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing it all.
Yeah. But it's not dying. In fact, you could argue that it's having a rebirth. Here's what happens when an artificial reef is created. So you've sunk your battleship.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Or your old refrigerator or your subway car or something.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And,
shopping cart.
And what scientists have noticed is that most of these artificial reefs sort of evolve in roughly predictable stages. So first, when the current hits something that's an abnormal kind of vertical structure, then it starts making a feeding spot. Plankton starts really, I guess you would say, pervading the water. So then your sardines and your minnows come in. And who follows your sardines and your minnows but your predators?
Bigger fish.
Yeah, your bigger fish to fry, the tuna and the shark. And then you see other creatures who come in saying, oh, this is a pretty nice hole here. There's a little nook or a cranny I can hide in. And that's where you get like your eels and your groupers and other things hiding. And then, of course, the wait and catch you predators like barracuda show up. And then, you know, months or years later, depending on how the ocean works, the old structure will be covered with algae, corals, sponges. And I think I especially like the phrase that Mr. Harrigan uses here. So I'm going to quote you, Mr. Harrigan: sprouting life everywhere like a giant chia pet.
Very aptly described, because that's what it looks like to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll take on a form that it doesn't even look like its original self. I mean, I have a major, you know, of course, an aircraft carrier is going to look like an aircraft carrier, I think, for decades.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be there.
It's going to have
long
at
time,
least
I
that
think.
Shape.
I would think so, yeah. But it's a very hairy appearance really. Lots of life around it. And that's one of the arguments that some marine biologists are saying, is that now, instead of creating life, because a lot of people see this as a way to, and I'm going to quote the article again, to boost the ocean's capacity to create fish.
Yes.
Now, that means that it creates a breeding ground that is likable, you know, to the fish in some way, causing them to spawn or, you know, to bring more life into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Some biologists argue that what it does is it draws fish from true reefs, from yes. natural occurring reefs to mm-hmm. these artificial reefs, which are then fished or overfished by fishermen, because they know where the sites of these things are and they know where, what's gathering down there.
Right. So the question then becomes, are we actually helping or are we just robbing Peter to pay Paul, as it were?
Yeah, exactly. And I like that phrase, by the way.
Thank you. I like that phrase. Yeah. You hardly ever get a chance to use it,
yeah.
especially because I have a lot of friends named Peter and Paul, so it's just awkward if I bring it up.
I have an uncle that used it all the time. And yeah, I've been working, trying to work that in for years now.
It took. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to steal your thunder.
No. I don't mean in the show. I just mean in everyday speech.
Oh, yeah.
So you want to take this in kind of a weird direction here?
Let's go weird, man.
Okay. You yourself could become a reef someday.
Ah, yes.
Part of a reef anyways. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I have an inkling, but I think most people do not know
okay,
this.
Okay, so you can be eternalized, I guess, if you want to say call it that.
That's a nice
word. In a reef. You could become a reef. And there's a company here and one of the companies. I think there are several that are doing
this.
Yeah,
there are several.
There's a company called Eternal Reefs. And what they do is they mix your cremated remains in a concrete mix that's then poured into this shell, I mm-hmm. guess you'd call it. Again, an artificial reef structure.
Kind of like a reef ball or something.
Yeah, they call it a reef ball, or they call it a kind of like a beehive almost, the way it looks, with holes bored through it. Very fish friendly, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
That can adhere, planktons and things like that can adhere to it. But the interesting thing about this is that, well, that's interesting enough already that you can be mixed in with this thing and then placed in these designated areas.
Right.
Yeah. They create this giant, they're creating a giant reef where they're building a bunch of these together. But it becomes a whole ceremony with your family. They can help in the process of making the cast if they like to. Mm-hmm. Adding the remains. There can be a whole ceremony with the thing. You can go out on a separate ship and watch it being lowered, and there'll be a plaque inside like a brass plaque maybe that's mounted inside the structure itself, the concrete. You can place your handprint in the structure if you want. You can have cremated pet remains mixed in with your remains if you want to. You can have other cremated remains if you want. Let's say a husband and wife want to do this and, they wait until the second person passes away and they create one. It's really kind of an interesting angle on this. And I think, there's so far a lot of people have been doing this. I don't know. I don't have numbers on how many have been done to date.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like an interesting option.
And it seems, it almost qualifies as another form of what people are calling like green burial, which is, a green burial, for people who are not familiar with it, is essentially the terrestrial version of what people are doing at Eternal Reefs, for example. And in a green burial, of course, the emphasis is on becoming a part of the landscape, not being pumped with a bunch of preserving chemicals and dropped in a concrete box or concrete shaft.
Sure.
And there's definitely an argument to make for it. I myself being, as I told you, this thing is hitting my soft spot, this idea that you could save, you could in a way try to make the ocean a better place, or try to fight against some of the extinctions and some of the mass deaths that we have in the ocean mm-hmm. nowadays. But I'm glad it's working out for using cremated remains to build effective artificial reefs, because we've learned there are things you cannot build a reef with.
Ah, very good. You know what? I'm glad you said that, because I was going to bring up something called the Osborne Reef. Now, I'm sure that's what you're talking about
yes,
as well, right?
Yes, sir.
This is one of those infamous failures in reef building.
Consider this a Scott and Ben mini podcast episode called When Good Intentions Go Wrong.
Yeah, this is let's call it What Not to Do.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing, Ben. when did all this go down? This was during the 1970s.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
During the 1970s, there was this idea that they were going to build a artificial reef, we've been talking about, near Fort Lauderdale. But this is about, I don't know, like I said, in the 70s at
yeah,
some point.
Yeah, this is early, mid-70s.
Okay, all right.
I
so
think.
They have this real good intention of building a natural, an artificial reef to really expand on an existing natural reef.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the idea. What happened was, and I'll quote this, it turned into an environmental fiasco, is what it says in this article.
Yes.
Go ahead. No, please do.
Well, it turns out that although it may sound like a really good idea to take tires out of landfills up to 2 million, I think. Discarded car tires. It may sound like a good idea to take these out of the landfill and make them into something that wildlife can use. But that only works if the wildlife can use it.
That's right. Now we're talking 2 million tires. So this is tires that would fit on 500,000 cars, okay?
Yes.
500,000 cars. That's a lot of cars. 2 million tires. You can imagine what this is like. If you can't, there are photos online, I'll tell you that.
So but they built this huge concrete foundation, right?
What they did was they tied all of these tires together. They sunk them to make this reef. They've got these big clusters of tires, right? Again, 2 million tires. That's an awful lot of tires. Mm-hmm. The problem with this is, Ben, like you said, it's only a good idea if they can use it. And it turns out that vulcanized rubber is not a good material for coral, really, to develop on. Not a good place to build.
It's not an ingredient in a healthy coral breakfast.
No, and no one at this point really knew that. That's the problem. I mean, like they said, they had good intent. Mm-hmm. Supposed to be, just an absolute solution to the problem, because here we're doing away with a lot of waste on land. Hopefully it's going to be put to good use underwater. Not the case.
It wasn't so much as everybody wins as it was the Osborne Reef Waste Tire Removal Project.
Yeah, that's right. Because what happened was it wasn't very long before, you know, of course, nothing really grew on these things.
Mm-mm.
And not, you know, I mean, you'll see some silt and that's about it on top
of
them.
Sure, yeah.
Maybe a tiny little bit of things that have just fallen on top of them.
Sure.
But they all broke apart. You know, whatever's holding them together broke apart and they scattered. Mm-hmm. Then hurricanes hit, as they do Florida often. Mm-hmm. And it just scattered the tires everywhere. It smashed them into the natural reefs, destroying what was there.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest thing, is that it destroyed that. But it spread out these 2 million tires over an area that covers more than 34 acres, Ben.
Which is huge when you consider how long it would take to cover 34 acres.
Oh my gosh.
In a way that would let you to pick up that trash.
And you know what? They're evenly scattered. When you look at photos of this thing, and you can find photos of the Osborne Tire Reef.
It looks almost purposeful.
It does, because they're laid out very evenly on the ground but it covers 34 acres. And imagine what it takes just to surface one tire. Imagine the effort that it takes to bring one tire back up to the surface.
Yeah, because this is the 70s. This is before some of the tire technology we have today. So these tires, they weren't light by any means.
Well, no. I mean, they're still heavy. They're heavy no matter what.
I mean,
these are tires of all types. Tractor tires, car tires, everything. Mm-hmm. It's an enormous job. It was estimated at the time that it would cost about $30 million to clean up the tires. So this is the problem. Now you've got these tires that are doing absolutely no good, but jamming things up out there and causing difficulty. So Coastal America, an organization whose job I'm reading from the article here, an organization whose job is to bring together federal agencies to perform large marine projects, coordinated an effort to remove the tires. Okay, this is in 2007, Ben. So Coastal America is working with the Navy and the Coast Guard divers who use it as part of a training exercise. Okay, they were able to reduce the cost from $30 million down to $2 million because it now becomes a training exercise for the military. Okay.
Okay.
So they found out that they were able to extract about 1,000 tires each day from the reef area, okay? Now, that sounds like a lot of tires, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about $2 million, okay, now it would take 3 to 5 years is what they would expect that it would take to do this, right?
Wow.
And their goal is to remove – about 700,000 of the 2 million tires. Now, that's 3 to 5 years to remove 700,000 at 1,000 tires every day.
Right.
So that's – as we find out – later, because I've got an update from, let's see, I don't know where this is from. Anyways, it's saying that, I know that's funny, right? So, now they find out that it's not possible to continue that rate. Okay.
Right.
Not possible to bring up 1,000 a day every day for the next 3 to 5 years, and that's only less than half of the material.
Mm-hmm.
They find out that there's also the problem with weather conditions, the assets availability. Like, when are they going to have the ships available to bring the tires up to? Are they going to have the trucks to then haul the tires away once they get them to the processing plant? It turns out that it's just not possible to get that many done. This thing is going to take years and years and years and years of extremely difficult work. So right now, I don't know where it stands right now, because this latest update that I have is from, I think it's from 2009.
Yeah.
And it was still kind of up in the air. Now, originally, this is way back. This is in like 2001. A small tire retrieval program was conducted in 2001 by someone from Nova Southeastern University, and he had a $30,000 grant from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That's NOAA.
Mm-hmm.
And
get it?
He was able to bring up 1,600 tires from a cost of about $17 per tire. Now, that gives you an idea. I mean, the guy had $30,000 for this retrieval program.
Yeah.
Then we jumped up to, $17 a tire. That's pretty expensive when you're talking about $2
million. So yeah, 17 times $2 million, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. What's that, $3.4 billion or something like that? I don't know. I'm way off on my – I'm not a math major,
it's
right?
It's too much.
So yeah, it's too much. Anyways, but – so then we jump forward to, when they're doing this training episode situation, and it just is – it's a nightmare, Ben.
It's got to be.
It really is. Take a look at the photos and you'll see what we're talking about. But this has got to leave a lot of people just holding their heads every day. Like, what are we going to do to fix this?
Now, don't be disappointed, listeners. We're not ending this on a down note. We're going to take it up a little. The whole reason we're telling you about this example of an artificial reef gone wrong and some of the pros and cons of these is because we want to hear from you guys. Do you think that artificial reefs are a good idea, a good way to dispose of, things like car bodies or large ships? Do you think that they, in the long term, help or hurt the undersea ecology? I was almost going to say economy.
Well, of course, and you've got to remember the way that they're clean too. I mean, they have to be like we talked about that Vandenberg, and I think that of the $8.4 million that they spent on the Vandenberg, 70% of that went into environmental concerns and cleaning of the ship. So that's a major point too, is that if you're this isn't just pushing a car off a dock,
right?
This is,
yes,
there's a lot involved with this, and it's not just individuals sinking cars.
Sink your car. Don't go sink your car.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. So, it's not just someone pushing a car off a dock, near a beach somewhere. This is an effort by a group or, several groups together to make an official, artificial reef, I guess.
All right, everybody. So go ahead and think on that and let us know what you think about artificial reefs. Is it a good idea? B, do you have a better idea? And C, why?
And D, would you go for the eternal reef idea? Would you become part of a reef yourself?
Oh, that's a good question. What about you, Scott? Would you?
I think I'd do it.
I
don't have any real tie to the sea, though. I'm not a sailor or anything like
that.
You're
not a mariner?
No.
I want to be shot in space, but I'm not an astronaut. I guess technically we will both be. You'll be a submariner and I'll be an astronaut.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I don't know. Oof. I might go the traditional route.
Yeah, so let us know what you think about that. I think I would be okay with being in the coral thing because I would be able to say, well, I'm helping new life or whatever. But, man,
sure.
Shot into space, Scott.
Maybe I could become part of the bodies exhibit.
Oh, man. Be careful what you wish for.
They could put me in the seat of a car.
Okay, I would be okay with.
The driving man. That's what they call me.
Weird. Wow.
Yeah, it would be crazy.
I mean, that's our new profile picture on Facebook, where you can find us. And you can also find us on Twitter and holler at us on our blog or talk to us directly about artificial reefs, becoming a reef yourself, and your thoughts on the subject at our email.
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.